The Centers for Dialysis Care in Cleveland, MOTEB. MOTEB stands for Minority Organ Tissue Transplant Education Program. Cleveland MOTEB has many programs, and I have the privilege to coordinate outreach events for our Community Vaccination Education Program. The Community Vaccination Education Program is grant-funded by the Centers for Disease Control Foundation and the Centers for Dialysis Care Foundation. The overall goal for Cleveland MOTEB's Community Vaccination Education Program is to increase confidence in COVID-19 and influenza vaccines in our targeted community and getting more adults in the African American population protected against COVID-19 and influenza. Cleveland MOTEB has an upcoming event where we will host our second community vaccine clinic at Eliza Bryant Manor, located at 1350 Addison Road, Cleveland, Ohio, 44103. That will be held on Thursday, October the 6th, 2022, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. For more information about Cleveland MOTEB, please check us out online at clevelandmoteb.org or follow us and like us on Facebook at Cleveland MOTEB, or you can call my direct contact number at 216-658-0727. Today we are joined with two amazing representatives from the Cleveland Department of Public Health. We will have soon Dr. Karen Cooper, the medical director of the Division of Health, and we have Frances Mills, the Commissioner of Health. We will first start off with Commissioner of Health Frances Mills, and she will tell us what she does at the Cleveland Department of Public Health.
Thank you, Tiffany. It's so nice to be with you today and actually to meet you in person. We have had many phone calls and virtual meetings and exchange of PPE over the last year. And so to actually see you in person and really commend you for the work that you're doing in the community, it's a good day.
Yes.
What I do at the health department, the health department is made up of three divisions. There's a division of health, air quality, health equity and social justice is our new fourth division, and the division of environment. And what we do in the health division is really oversee all of those things that happen in the community that need addressing. So COVID is one of those things. It falls under the work of our emergency preparedness and our nursing program and our epidemiology program. So the programs that I cover in the health division are epidemiologists and population health. They're responsible for collecting our data and doing surveillance when issues like COVID come up, following up with patients who have tested positive. Mm-hmm. Our emergency preparedness division, our health centers, the city of Cleveland has two health centers, one in the Glenville community at the J. Glenn Smith Center, and the other, it is called the McCafferty Center. Mm-hmm. And so we operate two health centers that is primarily offering to the community reproductive health services programming. And so those are the programs that I cover, as well as work with our other divisions that provide home visitation services for individuals who are pregnant, our Office of Mental Health and Substance Abuse, and our HIV program. So those two divisions sort of make up the health focus services in the department.
Wow, I never knew all that. I follow a lot of the events for McCafferty and Glenn online, which you have vaccination clinics every week, but everything else I did not know, so that is good to know. So we will get into, let's talk about the vaccines.
Sure.
I have my guide here for questions, but hopefully it's more of a conversation. We are over 2 years in this pandemic, and as you've stated some, if you can elaborate, because we have vaccination hesitancy, of course, in our population, what more has the Department of Public Health done to help get more people vaccinated and keeping our community safe?
Well, since the beginning of the pandemic, I can remember the day that we got our first vaccination in the community. It was such a small number of vaccine that was available at that time. It was December 2020, the week of Christmas. And since that time, we have really logged over 700 community clinics for COVID. So we have provided not only in our health center standing clinics for specialized populations, in terms of we added children's clinic to increase the number of young people who get vaccinated. We have a homebound program that we are working with, where individuals who are not able to get out and go to clinic, we will go directly to them. We send a strike team of nurses to go out and vaccinate. And then, of course, we had standing clinics in the community at our recreation centers. And then we began to do clinics at the request of churches, nonprofit organizations, residential treatment agencies, senior buildings, and CMHA. And so we continue to do that, even though the numbers are decreasing. There's still enough where we're seeing outbreaks in the community. In addition to the clinics, we have provided virtual education to the community. We've worked with community health workers and outreach workers who are actually boots on the ground. We have a whole host of partnerships with the COVID-19 funding collaborative that has gone out to do additional testing in clinics in the community. We provide PPE to organizations and individuals at request, and then the masks and the hand sanitizer sort of morphed into providing the Ohio Department of Health made available to us COVID home test kits. And so we began to distribute those, and we continue to distribute close to 1,000 test kits a month, still distributing masks and hand sanitizer to our daycares and to whomever really needs it. They can give us a call and we'll provide that for them. And so this has been a time in which partnerships has been critical. When COVID first started, there were daily meetings several times a day between the health departments. You know, in our community, we have two health departments, the Cleveland Department of Public Health and the Cuyahoga County Board of Health.
Okay.
So the two public health agencies, plus all of the hospitals, everyone was working together to see how we could best get vaccination out to the community. And so while we don't have those daily meetings, and then they dwindled down to weekly meetings, and then they dwindled, we don't even have partnership COVID meetings other than once a month. And so we continue to work at this. When the mayor assumed office in January, he established his own COVID task force, and he set a goal for us that 60% of the community in Cleveland would be vaccinated. And so that's why when you see our health department, many other health departments across the state are reducing the number of clinics that they're providing in the community. And we continue to have clinics every day. The standing clinics at our health center continue, and then we are offering vaccination at special events. Like today was senior day at Public Auditorium, and so that's a high traffic event that usually gets over 1,000 people. And so we were there this morning. We have that robust partnership with CMHA. We have a wonderful partnership with RTA, who has an immunity bus. And so just even the eye appeal of having that bus in the community, you see that purple bus, and you say, well, I know vaccine is available here at this site. And so we've done partnerships with them on Wade Oval Wednesdays and Yay Saturday. So many collaborations with the churches to get it out. So those things continue and will continue probably until the end of the year. We reevaluate, are there things that we need to increase doing? Are there things that we need to stop doing? And so we're committed to this work until we get to a place where I would say pandemic, endemic, no COVID. That's what I would love to see.
I like that. Meeting our community right where they are. They don't have to look for us. We go right where they are. And thank you for providing our organization with the PPE, the COVID 19 home test before it was even a popular demand. I remember requesting it and you getting it to us before the holiday, and then a line just swarming around Cleveland Clinic where people wanted to be tested before the holiday. But you know, the your organization was, you're always proactive. And one other thing that you said, the home visits, is that something where someone that's homebound, would they just call a number for that service to get set up if they can't get out to get vaccinated?
Sure. And it's a program that we've partnered with the Western Reserve Area on Aging and the Cuyahoga County Board of Health and the health department. We have all worked to provide that homebound program. And so if there's anyone who is interested, they can call Western Reserve Area on Aging, or they can call us directly at 216-664-2222.
Okay, awesome, awesome. One other note that I put down, I've come from the hospital community, working in the hospital environment, if you will, for 6 years, and now being out in the community is an eye-opener for me. And I see and I ask myself, why are people of color more at risk of being affected by COVID-19? I kinda know, but I want to know if what I'm thinking is what what you're going to tell me and tell us.
Well, when you talked about that question, it's a complex question. It really is, because it's difficult to hear risk factor associated with a race or ethnicity. However, when we begin to think about COVID, there are a number of considerations that we need to look at. The first one is, who's working? You know, when we got that civil emergency order, that businesses were being shut down, that schools were being shut down, there are times in which some people had to make a decision, we have to work. And so when you look at the frontline workers, individuals who provide medical support, like nurses, like medical assistants, like physicians, like RTA bus drivers, like people who work in grocery stores, people who support the community, they had to go to work. And so that grocery stores, when you think about providing food to individuals everywhere. And so these are what kind of jobs people were employed in dictated whether or not they needed to be out. And see, when you're out, you're exposed. And so those things were happening early on. Also looking at individuals who live in places where there's not much room to spread out. If a person gets sick, I don't have a place to isolate myself. And so we begin to think very early, even though the state said, we're going to roll vaccine out based on age, there were individuals who lived in congregate communities like nursing homes, like substance abuse treatment facilities, public housing, where the likelihood of spread, community shelters, homeless shelters, likelihood of outbreak and spread was high. And so I think those are some of the reasons. And when you begin to look at who's homeless, when you begin to look at who has a chronic health condition that makes them more susceptible to COVID. Those are some of the reasons why you see an elevated risk. And then some people, even to this day, when you talk to people, I've thought about getting vaccinated, but I haven't done it yet because I just haven't found time to do it. And so even 2 years in, there's still some people who say that.
Yes, you're right. You're right. Thank you. Thank you. We would like to welcome Dr. Karen Cooper. Thank you for joining us. We're just conversating, and we got into two questions, but we started off by Frances telling us what she did at the Cleveland Department of Public Health. So you could start us off by telling us what you do there.
Okay, so I'm the medical director there. A little more than 1 year old.
Oh.
Yeah, and my role entails a bunch of different things. It includes clinical activities, overseeing and evaluating those areas. It includes epidemiology consultation. It includes health promotion, disease prevention, programming, and probably a bunch of other things that I'm missing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've been there a little over a year, and it's been fun.
Absolutely. I'm sure that time has flown.
Yes,
we thank you for joining us. And like I told Frances, that this is a conversation, and we are so happy to have you be a part of it. I do need to put the mic. Okay. The next item I have on my notes are, what are some risk factors, or what are some factors that contribute to COVID-19 vaccine hesitancy in the Black communities, and how can it be addressed? And either one of you can, or both of you. Me working in the community, there's still a lot of hesitancy and myths. Every time it's an opportunity, and so just looking for ways to address it.
Yeah. Well, whenever there's a new vaccine that's out, there's going to be hesitancy everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
With our community, though, trust is a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this is a new vaccine, don't really know much about it, have had historical negative experiences with the medical establishments, still undergo institutional racism, have probably experienced substandard care if they are poor or in a social economic class, and also do not tend to see as many healthcare providers that look like them.
Yes.
And so all of those things add up to why someone in our community would not particularly want to have a vaccine that seems like it's new, and you know, they're not sure about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the big issues, or several big issues, I think, is affecting our community when it comes to vaccine hesitancy.
I agree. I share my story of when I was once hesitant, and side effects, you know, and just being honest, and that usually opens up the trust in the community. So totally agree.
And the sheer amount of, in addition to those systemic issues that Dr. Cooper referenced, just the sheer amount of information that's available to people is overwhelming. And so when you talk about myths being out there in the community, you know, a myth will reach you just as quickly as credible information reaches you. And so depending on how an individual is bombarded with that information, it's a lot to navigate. Well, the vaccine did this. No, it didn't do this. It did that. And so people having to sort through all of that and determine what's true and what's not true takes a toll on the decision-making process. And who do I trust with this when I may not necessarily trust a medical institution or the clinic that I go to? And people really relied on, well, what my family does. if my grandmother gets it, then mm-hmm. maybe I'll get it.
Right.
And so there's been so many things that have challenged individuals to get vaccinated. And so it's not all of that information to date. There's still myths out there about COVID mm-hmm. that really give people some pause on whether or not they want to be vaccinated. And so the availability 25 years ago, pre-internet, you listened to your doctor. Your mm-hmm. doctor gave you a recommendation, and we were eager to follow it oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And so now when you can go to WebMD and say, well, here are the symptoms. Do I have COVID? Mm-hmm. It makes it a little bit more difficult for traditional medicine mm-hmm. to get a positive response.
Right. Self-diagnosing ourselves on WebMD or any of those other sites.
But that's true. Addressing it mm-hmm. has been has been a journey in itself, but mm-hmm. really it's been addressed very much by information being put out on social media, on print media, mm-hmm. And people speaking to their physicians. I think people have been inundated with as much
yes.
information as possible to address it. That's been some of the ways. Also, because COVID started since the end of 2019, actually the beginning of 2020, mm-hmm. people have been able to see how it has impacted family members, friends, mm-hmm. even themselves. Mm-hmm. And at this point, actually, when you talk about vaccine hesitancy, the Black community, their gap is narrowed more than as compared to the white community in terms of vaccine hesitancy. This is a report that was just put out by JAMA, okay. Journal of American Medical Association. So I thought that was really good. Okay. You know, again, it leads back to trust. They mm-hmm. are trusting what is being told. They are seeing what's happening within their families, their mm-hmm. friends, to themselves, and they're getting a better understanding of how the vaccine helps.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What is the difference between someone that contracts COVID-19 who is vaccinated versus someone that is unvaccinated?
Well, I'm going to toss this to Dr. Cooper, but just in a layman's term, in what I've observed, individuals who are vaccinated oftentimes, mm-hmm. not always, but oftentimes, are less sick. Mm-hmm. If they do get COVID, often are not hospitalized, often, you know, has a shorter sick period that they experience. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's when people, they have said, well, why should I get vaccinated? I'm going to get COVID anyway. Mm-hmm. It is certainly designed to prevent death, hospitalization, mm-hmm. and severe sickness. So with that, I'm going to toss that clinical ball over to Dr. Cooper.
And Commissioner Mills took the clinical ball very well. There's nothing more to add. Someone who's not yes. vaccinated is at risk for more severe disease as well as hospitalization and death. Mm-hmm. So it is good to get vaccinated.
Yes, you hit that right on the nail, Commissioner Mills. Post-COVID recovery, can you explain what long COVID means?
So long COVID mm-hmm. really refers to the long-term effects mm-hmm. of having had COVID-19 infection. Mm-hmm. In some people, not everyone, they tend to experience longer-term effects of having had the infection than other people. And some of those symptoms are, they tend to be more neurological, and mm-hmm. most of the common complaints or symptoms are fatigue, fever, weakness, headache, mm-hmm. Foggy memory, foggy brain, depression and anxiety, shortness of breath, mm-hmm. and then there are a whole host of other types of symptoms that can occur, but those are the most common ones that are shared when it comes to long COVID. It can last a long time. I mean, long COVID, long term, it can last a pretty long time.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's another reason to mm-hmm. make sure you know, you test and also that you get vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Do we see more unvaccinated versus vaccinated or getting long COVID, or it's if you've had it?
That's a great question, mm-hmm. and I would need to look that up. Mm-hmm. But given that you experience milder symptoms mm-hmm. being vaccinated if you get infected or reinfected with COVID, I would want to lean to the side that you may be less at risk for getting long-term COVID.
Okay.
But I would definitely look that up to make sure.
Okay. All right. There's a big concern in the community about the new COVID-19 variants. Are they more contagious than the previous variants?
So, she knows as much as I do, so I want to give her a chance to talk. So when COVID started, we had this alpha variant, and then it mutated, right? And the Delta variant came along, and that really was the worst ever because it spread faster than the alpha, and it was much more severe in terms of the illness that occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Delta came Omicron, and Omicron started spreading faster even than Delta. But the good thing about Omicron is that it was not as virulent or as harmful as, or rather, the better way to say is the infection or illness was not as severe as when people succumbed to Delta. And now with Omicron, there are sub-variants of that variant. And the ones that we have noticed or the scientific world has noticed is really causing a problem. It started out with BA.2, started to be the first subvariant that caused the problem of Omicron, and then BA.4 and BA.5, and now I think the most recent one is BA.4.6. So although Omicron has typically been the milder form of, I really hate saying that because it sounds like you can get infected and it's okay. It's not. But it's milder as compared to Delta. We're a little bit concerned about the BA.5 and the BA.4.6. Although our hospitalizations are nothing like it was before, we are seeing some more hospitalizations. So and some more instances of severe illness.
Okay.
So what happened based on that is they noticed, scientific community noticed, that not only was the effect of the prior vaccines wearing off over time, but also they could put together the original variant with these subvariants and create a new booster or third shot to help protect people better. And so that's the new vaccine that's out called the bivalent. We can get it in Pfizer and Moderna, and that's what's being recommended for people to get as their booster shot. Even though it's the third shot, I mean, many people have had primary series 1 and 2, booster 1 and 2, and so this is another one, and they can still get it.
Okay.
So they can still get that booster to make sure that they are protected during the fall season in January.
Right. And if they haven't gotten, if they've had their first and second dose, the first series, this booster replaces that old one?
It does, yes, because it is combining the variants together to offer better protection. So we are not offering, CDC recommends not giving the monovalent vaccines that we were giving before as boosters.
Okay.
And they're available right now.
Very available.
In the city of Cleveland.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You've tapped into a lot of the conversation flows, so I'm just checking my notes. You may have elaborated on this. I have a note here of why does the new variant cause more COVID-19 reinfections, where people are getting COVID-19 once, twice, seem to get it more than once, more so than ever.
It's spreading faster. I mean, it spreads faster. It's spreading faster.
Okay.
So that, again, very important to be vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
It's spreading faster than all the other variants had spread before.
Okay.
But would you say, Dr. Cooper, that the vaccine causes a person to be more susceptible to reinfection?
No, not at all. Nothing is foolproof. And so with the vaccine, you can get an infection, right? Mm-hmm. You can get a breakthrough, what they call a breakthrough infection. But your illness, you may not have any symptoms because you've been vaccinated, or your symptoms are less severe. It certainly prevents hospitalization, severe disease, and death. Mm-hmm. The data, the literature shows that. And if people want to anecdotally think about it, they have instances of themselves or family members or friends who, being vaccinated, did not have a severe course of the disease, of the illness.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's all my notes for COVID-19 before I switch gears to monkeypox. Is there anything else that you may want to add before we wrap up COVID-19 vaccines that I may have not?
I think Dr. Cooper has said it multiple times. It is still very important to say, given the time that we're in, we're looking at the data that we have available to us that shows us that COVID has not gone away. Mm-hmm. There's still cases in the hundreds that we see on a weekly basis. And that's just with the data that's known. With the onset of home testing, oftentimes people don't report. We have no idea, the health department, Ohio Department of Health, we have no idea that an individual has contracted COVID. Mm-hmm. And so what we have are simply estimates of the COVID that's out in the community. And so, but what we do know is that the vaccines work. Mm-hmm. And so there's still opportunities, multiple opportunities and multiple venues for people to get vaccinated. We just want people to get vaccinated. It may not necessarily be done by the Cleveland Department of Public Health. Go to Rite Aid, go to Walgreens, go to CVS, go to your federally qualified health clinic, go anywhere, but just get vaccinated to protect yourself. It is still the best protection that you have in your toolbox to prevent COVID.
Mm-hmm. And it's still free.
That's right. Thank you for those final thoughts, Commissioner Mills. Moving to, what do we need to know about monkeypox? Now we've added two things. What do we need to know?
Well, just another thing that you don't want. You do not. And certainly the onset of monkeypox has caused quite a stir across the country in terms of its magnitude. Mm-hmm. We're fortunate here in Cleveland that there are not a whole huge number of cases in Ohio, but certainly something that is significant enough for us to pay attention to as of this week. And, you know, these are numbers that we have to check daily. Mm-hmm. I think we have 68 cases of monkeypox in the city of Cleveland.
Wow. Wow. And what are some of the symptoms other than the rash? And do the symptoms, are there symptoms, can someone have monkeypox and not have the rash? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So monkeypox is an orthopox, which is the family of smallpox. Mm-hmm. It looks like smallpox. Mm-hmm. It resembles it, I should say. But the course of disease is much less severe. Mm-hmm. It's usually 2 to 4 weeks. How it presents, can be a little bit different from person to person. But basically, what should occur is that there's a rash, which goes through different stages. Mm-hmm. So it may start as, you know, like some redness on the skin that might be swelling a little bit, and then it turns into, you know, like a blister, and then that might get filled with pus, so, you know, we call it a pustule. And then once that breaks open and a scab forms, so it goes through all these various stages of infection, you know, of expression, I should say, of the infection. And only when the last layer of skin is gone and new skin has formed over that area is someone no longer contagious with monkeypox.
Wow. Okay.
And so your question was, does it always present with a rash? Mm-hmm. No, not always.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Not always. And so the thing that distinguishes it in terms of clinical assessment from smallpox is the fact that people with monkeypox tend to have lymphadenopathy or swelling of their lymph nodes. Mm. So that's an indication that that's what it is.
Wow. Okay. Wow. How does monkeypox spread?
So monkeypox spreads through close contact, mm-hmm. from one person to another. It can also spread if the person is in contact with the lesion, right? Mm-hmm. With the fluid, with contaminated bedding, through respiratory droplets only when the person's very close to the other person. But primarily it's physical contact. Mm-hmm. So being in very close contact with someone or with the contaminated materials is how someone can get monkeypox.
Okay. So the liquid,
skin, mm-hmm. kissing, mm-hmm. Just your normal close contact, mm-hmm. that you would have with an individual or coming in contact with contaminated towels, mm-hmm. bed linens, those sorts of things, monkeypox can be spread, which would cause a considerable amount of concern in the same way that COVID would for, mm-hmm. folks who are in enclosed spaces, potentially being exposed to linens, towels, folks who are swimming, mm-hmm. Those sort of things.
Mm-hmm. Dancing without, you know, shirts, mm-hmm. on or whatever, mm-hmm. or close contact. You know, sweaty bodies dancing, you know. Mm-hmm. And when we think about monkeypox, we're always thinking about adults, but children can get it too, because if an adult is infected and hugs their child or some other child, mm-hmm. That child's gonna get it. Again, it's about close contact.
Okay.
Daycare.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Daycare centers.
Right. Exactly.
You hug your grandchild, mm-hmm. your grandchild goes to daycare. What do we know about kids?
Right.
We know that
they like to touch things.
They like, mm-hmm. to hug each, mm-hmm. other. They're affectionate, and it has potential,
mm-hmm.
for,
yeah.
spread.
Yeah. And you brought up a good point. Daycare, gyms. What about grocery stores? Because COVID with grocery stores is monkeypox, not too, mm-hmm. because that's not necessarily if someone touched something in the grocery store shopping is not the same with monkeypox.
No.
It has to be skin to skin.
Well, no, I mean, it can be inanimate objects, but that, mm-hmm. contact would have to be long.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes
sense. Or with the bedding, it's very contaminated with the, mm-hmm. person's fluid and so on. And so, mm-hmm. touching that, sleeping on someone's bed who has been infected with monkeypox.
Okay.
Those are examples.
Okay. How can we prevent monkeypox?
So, prevention of monkeypox, a little similar to COVID. So it's a good thing we went through COVID, right?
Yeah.
And we're still going through COVID, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure that you're washing your hands at all times. So good hand hygiene, social distancing in terms of, you know, mm-hmm. moving away from body-to-body contact, being aware of what monkeypox is and what it looks like, mm-hmm. and also being aware of the environment that it seems to be springing out of more right now and determining if you or someone is high risk. So just really being aware of the virus, what it looks like, how you can get it, and making sure you're doing really good hand hygiene and other social distancing measures is one way to prevent it,
mm-hmm.
as well as with vaccines that we have now,
mm-hmm.
one vaccine.
Okay. That was my last question, is can you help us understand the monkeypox vaccine and who should get vaccinated?
Well, I mean, what we've seen just in terms of expression,
mm-hmm.
Individuals who are immunocompromised, individuals, mm-hmm. who are within the HIV spectrum,
mm-hmm.
individuals who work with monkeypox samples directly. Are individuals who are considered high risk, individuals who, men who have sex with men, individuals who've had multiple sexual partners in the recent term. Those are people who should have heightened awareness of monkeypox and should seek out vaccine. And again, just like COVID, vaccine has been available in small doses, but really there are clinics that are ramping up across the city. The department has had in the last few weeks a number of clinics, and will continue to have clinics that will be planning to roll out at the health centers soon.
So I think the response has been really great. In the beginning, we didn't have vaccine. And so now that we have vaccine, I do feel that the response from our public health departments, including ours, and the local hospital systems have been really great, really trying to target the community and help make sure that people at risk can get the vaccine. So the vaccine that's out is one that was actually formulated for smallpox. The smallpox vaccine, the original smallpox vaccine, was a live vaccine where people could actually get smallpox when someone got vaccinated with the vaccine. But this vaccine, although it's live, it's weakened. And so it was formulated to make sure there was a better vaccine should smallpox come along again. But because they're in the same orthopox family, it also has been shown to treat monkeypox. So we're very lucky that we do have this vaccine that's not as transmissible as the original vaccine. And so that's what we're using now.
And to help people with that, monkeypox is not new. It is new to the United States, not common in the United States. And so monkeypox has been around for a long time. We just have not been exposed to it here in the United States.
So it is really a zoonotic virus, so meaning that it goes from animal to animal. And so so as not to go into a long, long history of anything. It started way back in Africa, and it sometimes gets exported out to the U.S. and the U.K. So the first time that the United States had it, and I think that was in 2003 or so, but I might have my years wrong, is because some prairie dogs were brought from one country to another, and those dogs were infected with it. So that's how it first landed here several years ago. But this new outbreak, they think, originated from the newer outbreak that occurred in Nigeria about 5 years ago and has just now made its way to the UK and the US.
Dr. Cooper, Commissioner Mills, thank you both. What a conversation, an important one at that. I don't know if you have any final thoughts, because you both have given us so much, and I'm glad that it will be shared for our community to hear. Thank you for being here. Thank KAZ TV Network for having us today. Any final thoughts? I think you've shared your heart and what you do. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you for being our community partners too.
The one thing I did forget to say is that monkeypox is a self-limiting disease, so it lasts between 2 and 4 weeks. The variant that we have rarely causes death, but we just had one death in the United States because of it. And that did happen to someone whose immune status was very weakened. So it's really important for people who have a weakened immune status, that are in a high-risk group, to make sure that they are getting vaccinated. We really are offering the vaccines everywhere now. We've gotten a better supply of vaccines, and so it's easy to get a vaccine. The vaccine, which has to be given 2 doses, 4 weeks apart.
And then if folks are interested and concerned about monkeypox and they want to get vaccinated, every Friday, this Friday, the Fridays for the rest of September, they can go to 1313 East 26th Street and get vaccinated. If they want more information about monkeypox, they can give us a call at 216-664-2222.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that information. I know it's on your Facebook page, and we share it on our Cleveland MOTEP page. Thank you for that.
And it's also on our website.
Website as well.
ClevelandHealth.org.
ClevelandHealth.org. Thank you.